So welcome back. We are now learning in Melachim Beis. We are in Perek Tes, and we are focusing on a series which I'm entitling the Years of Prosperity. These are the years of Shlomo HaMelech. When Shlomo HaMelech has done quite well for himself, he's built the Beis HaMikdash, he's built his palace, and now what happens afterwards? So we're going to focus on tonight's focus will be the second half of Perek Tes. We're going to move from Pasuk Yudalad all the way to the end of the Perek in two brief sections. And the title of today is Israel in Geopolitics. Okay, so this is our opportunity to learn about this. For those on my email list, I did send out the sources as a PDF. For those who are not on my sources who would like to be, please send me a private message and I'll pick that up and add you to the list so you can have it. In the meantime, I'm happy to share, do a screen share so we can all be on the same page in terms of following through with us. Here we go. Let me just find the right spot, and we will start learning together. I'm just trying to find the right document to share. It looks like I'm not finding it right now, so I'm going to try this. Give me a moment, and then we will be all set. Here we go. Okay, hang in there. Okay, I'm having a problem with sound. Okay, can you hear me? Okay. Looked like I just had a little bit of a problem with sound, but it looked like it got fixed. Okay, so here we go. We are going to be focusing on this section over here. So for those who can see the screen, if you're in a computer, that's great. If you're not, it's going to be Torah Shabbat Peh. That is fine too. So our focus is going to be understanding here Israel in the geopolitics of the region of the Middle East. It's very much akin to what we're going through today, where you see Israel now as not simply an underdog, but as a rising power in both in military, in politics, in trade. And this is really what's happening at the time of Shlomo HaMelech. So we understand the complexities of relationships, the dualities of relationships. We're going to see some of those complexities this evening. First, we're going to focus on these psukim, which is going to be, as we serialize it, we look at it sections at a time. So we're looking at section Perek Tes, psukim Yudalad to Chof Beis, and here is what we're going to do. We're going to look at those first few psukim together. We're told the following. Vayishlach Hiram lemelech. So Hiram now sends to the king, 120 kikar zahav, 120 talents of gold. V'ze devar hamas asher he'ela ha'melech Shlomo livnos es beis Hashem ve'es beisov ve'es hamiloi ve'es chomas Yerushalayim ve'es chotzor ve'es migidoi ve'es gezer. So they had this large taxation, and this taxation was in order to enable the building of a few things. The house of God, that's the Beis HaMikdash, the house of Shlomo, that's his palace, the miloi, we're going to investigate what that is, the wall of Yerushalayim, Chatzor, Megiddo, and Gezer, those sound like three cities. And now we're told an interesting aspect of the neighbors in the south. Paro, Melech Mitzrayim, Allah, Vayil Kodes Gezer, Vayisor Foba Esh. We know that Pharaoh in Egypt came and he burnt down Gezer in fire. Ve'ez Aknaniya Yosheb Ba'ir, Harag, and he killed all the Canaanites. Vayid Nash Shiluchim Levitoy Eshes Shlomo, and he sent them as messengers, or this is actually as a dowry to his daughter, who was the wife of Shlomo HaMelech. Vayiven Shlomo es Gezer ve es Beis Choron Tachtov, and he built Gezer and Beis Choron. We're going to take a look at a map in just a moment and appreciate this perspective. Ve es Baalos ve es Tadmor Bamidbar Ba'aretz, and he built up these other settlements, Tadmor and Baalos. Ve es Kol Arei Hamiskonos Asher Ayu LeShlomo ve es Arei HaRechev ve es Arei HaParashim. He built up all these types of cities, storehouses. These sound like chariot houses and the stables for his horses. Ve'es cheshek Shlomo asher chashak livnos b'Yerushalayim uvalavonon uvuchol eretz memshaltoi. And all the buildings he decided to build for pleasure that he felt were appropriate across the lands of his dominion. Kol ha'ama nosar min ha'moriach etziv ha'prizi ha'chiviv ha'yvusi. All the remaining nations who are from the original Canaanite nations, b'nehem asher noseru achariyhem baretz asher lo yachlu b'nei Yisrael achrimam vayalem Shlomo lamas oved adayam hazeh. So those nations who were in a sense used as taxation, they were not killed; they were used as a taxation till today. U'mibnei Yisrael lo nasan Shlomo eved ki hem anshei milchama. And Shlomo never made a slave of one of the Israelites. Why ki anshei milchama? Because they were the soldiers v'avodah v'sarov v'shalishov v'sarei richboy for Rosho. They served him in his army. Okay, so we hear a lot of interesting things in this brief section that we just looked at. We hear about Hiram's donation or his contribution towards the building of these different areas. We hear about the different areas. We hear about Paro's contribution about burning down Gezer. We hear Shlomo building up a number of cities, a number of storehouses, and his policy when it came to the children of those who were the children who of the Canaanites who remained. This is what we hear about. So it seems like a lot of policy, internal policy, a lot of foreign policy we're witnessing over here. Let's try to analyze it in a few steps. First thing is, just a basic question. At the beginning of the section, we hear that Hiram is donating these talents of gold. That's a lot of gold. Okay, let's come back to that number. Me'av Esrim Kikar Kesev, 120 talents of gold. That's a lot of gold. Why is he doing that? Why is he contributing so much money towards Israel? So the answer that seems to be given over here is a very fascinating observation of the Abarbanel. And I thought this is just such a very, very beautiful insight. Here's what the Abarbanel suggests. He says, well, let's put things in context. If you remember from last week, we last left our heroes where Shlomo and Hiram had this deal, where according to many of the Mephoreshim, 20 cities went from Israel to Tyre, and 20 cities of Tyre came from Tyre to Israel, which means there was this dual trade deal. But interestingly enough, Hiram was dissatisfied with the quality of the land that was given to him. He called it Eretz Kavul, and for those who are studying the Daf Yomi, that was in last week's Daf on Daf Nun, I think it was Nun Dalad, where it talks about how he was upset with that land being not sufficiently prosperous enough for his side of the deal. So says the Abarbanel, why is this being told to us now that he's contributing 120 talents of gold? He says, Achshov, the Abarbanel surmises, this is not from the Psukim, but this is his logic. Achshov boy, shebo hine, loidia, shechiram im heyois, shalonit payes. Im he'arim asher nosan la'shlomo lakachas mehem hachito v'ashem en asher yonosan elov shana b'shana hinei im kol zeh lo'nosog achar liboy mila'avoid ha'melech shlomoy b'chol mo'edoy. Even though he was disappointed in the produce and the deal that Shlomo was presenting him, that did not sway his heart from having a very warm relationship with the king of Israel. That's a very beautiful thing. That's a very unusual thing. Usually when people get upset, that turns into all kinds of international problems. So the focus over here seems to be that here you have Hiram and Shlomo's relationship may have been tested through this moment, but nonetheless, they were still bosom buddies. They were still very close to each other, and they never for a moment let that go. That's what the Abarbanel suggests. Very beautiful idea over here. Again, it just speaks to the magnitude of Shlomo as an individual, as a leader, as God's representative. Where are these places that it talks about? We hear about Chatzor, Megiddoi, Betzer. So he has a helpful map, which will be useful. This is on the second page of the sources today. Chatzor is actually in the north. Megiddoi is somewhat towards the center. Mid-Galilee and Gezer is essentially just to the west of Yerushalayim. So these are the three main cities that we're told about in the Psukim that Shlomo HaMelech is investing in. So this is a cross-kingdom. What is also interesting is that Gezer is described differently to Megiddoi and Chatzor. For the simple reason is that Gezer was burnt down by the Egyptians, which that's a very interesting point geopolitically, because Egypt is way south. And if they had to burn down Gezer, it indicates that it was a stronghold of the Canaanites even until the times of David and Shlomo. Whether they were in attrition with the Israelites or whether they were at peace with the Israelites, we don't really know that. But we do know that Paro, the Pharaoh at the time, sent out his armies to Gezer and made this as a contribution to as dowry for his daughter. Fascinating sort of, you know, we'll call it cross-border politics here. It seems that Israel and Egypt are on good terms, but that's very deep into Israel heartland that Egypt's making a foray, just to appreciate the geography of that. Let's go back to the other things that Shlomo HaMelech built. He built the Milo. What is the Milo? So the one of the translations of the word miloi is a rampart or a mound. So he was building the rampart or the mound. Other ways to describe it is maybe a part of the fortifications of Yerushalayim. So why is the Tanakh giving us the emphasis that not only did he build the Beis HaMikdash, not only his own palace, but the Milo, what's the point of this? And moreover, in fact, we've seen the Milo previously in Tanakh. So for the sake of posterity, if you go back to Sefer Shmuel Beis, Perek Hey Posuk Netes, this again, just a critical moment in history, it was David HaMelech has just become king. The Ish-bosheth, the king of the south, has just been murdered. David HaMelech assumes rule over both the north and the south. At this point in time, David HaMelech expands his king and starts now acting as the monarch of the full kingdom. And one of the things he does, as we're told there, Vayeshev David ba-Mitzudah, he lived in his Mitzudah, his fortress, Vayikra Loi, Ir David, this is where he called it the citadel of David. It was before the hotel arrived. Vayiven David Saviv min ha-Milo v'vavaisa. And he now made this the area of the Miloi inwards. So what is this Miloi? Actually, it's interesting. Archaeologically today, they've surmised that, you know, if you come out of the Shara Ashbot by the Kotel, which God willing we should all be able to do soon. So if you look out, and you look down to the Kidron Valley, just going down south to the right, the area over there is an area called Area G, where they surmise where the structure on the right is over here, which is actually what they call the Miloi. You see these, it's like sort of a mound of stones and there's steps made into it. So what is it? So if we're to understand that we're talking about a fortification, that makes a lot of sense, but why do we need to hear about this? So there are a number of suggestions from the Mefarshim as to what the function of the Miloi was. The Ralbag, Gersonides, has a very interesting insight. He says, V'nei hayu elo habinyanim, binyan beis Hashem, binyan beis HaMelech, binyan HaMiloi, she'er soviv Tzion. They were around Mount Zion. Ki David bonam min HaMiloi v'lifnim, k'moy she'kasu b'sefer Shmuel, v'nishar HaMiloi bilti bonui. So David HaMelech started the process of building the Miloi, but he wasn't able to consecrate it. V'ha makom she'yu ne'esofim sham Yisrael. V'lozeh nikra Miloi. So it was actually a gathering point. It was a large social gathering point. And David HaMelech started the process, was not able to finish the process. Shlomo HaMelech now enters and finishes that process just outside of his palace. He makes his large gathering area, a fortified area where Israel can come. So it's, so to speak, a social receiving area of sorts, it sounds like. This is the way the Ralbag understands it. What the Ralbag is doing for us, just to appreciate where he's coming from, is he is synthesizing Sefer Shmuel Beis and Melachim Aleph, what we're reading. In order to appreciate why is it saying that David HaMelech and Shlomo HaMelech built the Miloi, the answer is David started, was not able to finish it. Shlomo HaMelech is able to finish it as part of his, we'll call it, archaeological expansion of the nation of Israel. That's what we should be thinking about. It is worthwhile noting here, just as a fascinating thing, Yigal Ariel points out on this over here that you see something interesting, and that is that there's also a little bit of a shift of power which we're about to see. Well, let's put a memo over here. Let's put a little asterisk by the Beis HaMiloi and come back to that in a moment. It's not so simple. It's more than meets the eye here. Come back to that in a moment. But now we enter into a little bit of what Yigal Ariel points out is a very strange thing. We hear about now not only the building of all of these fortifications of Yerushalayim, but we hear about the building of these cities, one of them being Gezer, which is the city which is burnt down by Pharaoh and all the people, the Canaanites, are killed. What's the point? What's the significance of this conquest? Why was Pharaoh in the land of Canaan, in the land of Israel, doing this conquest? The Malbim tells us in source 4, Paro melech Mitzrayim mikan ad beis churon tachtov hu ma'amar muskar v'shira kosov, and this is what the pasuk means, shebona es migidoi v'es gezer v'es beis churon tachton. So Shlomo Melech built all these cities. V'siper eich bona es gezer. How could he build Gezer? It was a Canaanite city, as we know in Yeshua and Shoftim. How does Shlomo Melech have the ability to build Gezer? Surely it was a Canaanite city. The answer is Pharaoh laid waste to it. Once he laid waste to it, Shlomo was able to build it, which is why it's listed over here. Why did Pharaoh do this? Because he was giving it to his daughter. You'll notice, if you go back to the map beforehand, Gezer is the closest of these major cities, which is to Yerushalayim, which is where Shlomo is. So he gave his daughter some sort of dowry. Now, by the way, yes, it is belated, it sounds like, meaning Shlomo Melech at this point in time is married for many years to the daughter of Pharaoh. We're told about that much earlier in Sefer Melachim. But it seems that this is just interesting in terms of the shifting of power dynamics here. By doing this, in a certain sense, what he's doing is he's granting his daughter a certain degree of independence. Meaning, you can't say no to your father-in-law's gift like that, right? He's giving you a large fortified city, right? So on the other hand, but he's giving it to in the name of his daughter. So now Bas Paro, who's now Mrs. Shlomo, essentially, she is the queen, now has more power, wields more power by this gift. So there's complications in these kind of gifts. We all, you know, in a regular situation, when in-laws come in and give apartments or give gifts, even without strings attached, there's always something. There's a string attached of a certain degree. And over here, it's more complex because now we're dealing with not simply a marriage, but we're dealing with the marriage of kingdoms. So this is something just to be aware of as we explore this a little further. A few other questions. At the very end of that last passage, it said that Shlomo Melech never made any Israelite a slave. So what does that mean exactly? So what this means, the Ralbag explains to us, is we're not talking about slavery per se, we're talking about conscription for work. So the Ralbag explains, V'inei amas hazeh, who was doing all this work? Who were the laborers who were building the miloi, who were building these cities, who were building the stables? Those were the Canaanites' children. This means to tell us, says the Ralbag, they decided not to convert to Judaism. In the area that they were not able to conquer, So the way to read the pasuk is to understand it this way. When it came to the menial labor of building, that was the Canaanites, the children who were not conquered, who were not able to be killed. And who was in the ranking in the army? Those are Israelites. That's the way the Ralbag understands it over here. So you have this very complex system over here. Everybody's serving the king. Just there's different degrees of serving the king. There's serving the king by building with bricks, and there's serving the king with in the army. The Israelites were relegated to the army, that level of conscription. So it's just worthwhile understanding the dynamics of the society. Something which should be scratching in the back of our minds as a concern over here is you have Shlomo Melech levying taxes from the nation of Israel, and some of those taxes seem to be going for personal use. Just worthwhile thinking about that for a moment. Now, of course, many of the structures and the cities we've talked about here are, we'll call it national interest, but Cheshek Shlomo might also mean personal interests. And when you have personal interests and public coffers, those two do not work well together, generally speaking, which is something which should give us pause. We should be thinking about that, what that means, and we will be forced to think about that when we see about the rebellion which is in the Lees right now. Okay, we move on to the next section, the last section of Psukim of this Perek. So what we focused on up till now was Shlomo Melech's building and across the country, some of the elements of those building. We're now going to focus now on his international policy. So here we go, the consolidation from Psukim Chof Gimel to Chof Ches. We're going to read them as a unit and then focus forward. So you have a system of, obviously, there were officers who were in charge of the different categories and legions of people who were working with him. Bas Paro also Meir David El Beiso Asher Bonola Oz Bono Es Hamilo. So the Bas Paro, who is one of his wives, now ascended from the house of David to her own house, and that means to say that she now left the palace of Shlomo. Shlomo had made a palace almost the same size as his for her. We saw that when building the Beis Hamikdash, there was a separate house. And she enters her own quarters, Oz Bono Es HaMiloi, and then he built the Miloi. Milo is coming back. Hold that thought. Why is the Miloi coming back? So he brings three times a year, he's bringing sacrifices on the altar he built in front of Hashem. At a cursory note, this is probably the Shalosh Regalim. And he completes the house, he finishes the Beis Hamikdash. Va'ani. That does not mean I. Vani comes from the word aniya. The boats. Asa Melech Shlomo be'etzion gover. He made an etzion gever. Asher es Elois, which is near Elois. Al Sfas Yamsuf be'eretz Edom, which is on the shores of Yamsuf, of the Red Sea, down by Edom. Vayishlach Hiram bo'ani es avodov anshei aniyos yodeh hayom im avdei Shlomo. And Tyre. Now Phoenicia sends down their servants to join the fleets of Shlomo on the boats, Because remember, the Phoenicians were traders on the Mediterranean. So he's sending his seaworthy crew who know the trades down to the Red Sea now through Israel as a safe passage. Vayavoa Ophira, and they reach Ophira. They buy a huge amount of talents of gold from down south. And they enable it to bring it to be Shlomo. So this is the end of the perek. This takes us to the end of the section. A few basic questions as we try to unpack this area. Number one, why is she living somewhere else? What is the Bas Paro doing here? Why is she leaving the palace? The Malbim tells us, Ach Bas Paro also, V'diriyamim k'siv es Bas Paro he elo Shlomo mi'ir David, ki amolete shev yisho li beis David, Shom be'eratan. I explain the reason. Ma shebono lo bayis bifnei atzmo. Why did she get her own palace in the end of the day? Shukadei shlo teyeshev beveis David. He didn't want her to be in the house of David. Uposiper sha'acha shebono lo bayis. Also he me'atzmo birtzono el beiso. She herself picked herself up by herself. Skipping the parentheses. Liyos mugudar bishvilo letznius. Ubotim la'avodeh al-meshoseh. She had her own place because she needed her own privacy. V'shom omar. So what the Malbim is pointing out over here is that if you contrast the version of Melachim Aleph to Divrei Hayamim, which are the two parallel narratives over here, you'll see the one indicates that Shlomo HaMelech moved her, and in Divrei Hayamim it indicates that she moved herself. So, which is true? So the answer is he didn't want her in the palace. This was a political marriage. On the other hand, he made her want it herself. So when she was asked, she would say, you know, I needed the space. I needed the privacy. So that's why she did it. But ultimately, Shlomo HaMelech was doing it in order to distance her. Which means to say, already you're seeing hairline fractures in this relationship over here. Yes, he's married to Bas Paro. Maybe she's a little bit too much. Maybe she has too much power. Maybe she has too much dominion. So what's happening over here is that Shlomo HaMelech is distancing herself in a way that she perhaps feels that it's of her own initiative. That's what you see when contrasting these two sections. What is this ani again? The ani, right? The Malbim says, in case you've never seen that word before, he says va'ani hu shem hakolal aniyos k'moy vahili shor v'chamor. When you say in Hebrew, I have oxen, you don't say oxen. Shor means I have a category. I have a large herd of ox. V'chamor means to say I have a lot of donkeys. When a person says va'ani, ani means many, many, ani yos, many boats. So Shlomo HaMelech now has a fleet, which leads us to a very basic geographical question, which is, where is Eilat and Etzion Gover? Where is Eilat and Etzion Gover? The name Eilat, which we saw just a moment ago, should remind us of something, right? That name over there, Eilat. What does that sound like? Sounds very much like what we know today as Eilat. So if we look at the map over here, I just put a map over here, which is very helpful. Eilat and Etzion Gover are at the very tip of the sea in the south of Israel. So they have conquered this area now on the coast. That is a very important and strategic point for Israel to control, because now not only does it give them access to the Mediterranean trade routes, it now gives them access over here, if you go further south, to, in fact, the Red Sea and the Arabian Peninsula, and going further east towards India as well. So it opens up completely new vistas of trade routes, which is why it's a significant conquest, which is being described over here. Worthwhile noting over here, just for a very brief moment, is that you see something interesting, which is that Eilat was not part of Israel proper. Eilat was not part of the original conquest of Israel. It was an expansion of Israel, which is why Eilat has different halachas when it comes to examples of mitzvos hataluyos ba'aretz. So although today we certainly appreciate the fact that Eilat is a very significant and important part of the land of Israel, in the original conquest, actually the southernmost border was towards Be'er Sheva. That was where the desert began, which is where Israel went to. You even notice in the psukim, which were described, that Eilat and Etzion Gover were in the land of, who owned them? Where was the conquest made? Edom. You'll see here on the map of here, Edom and Seir were in the south, which means that the expansion of Shlomo HaMelech's kingdom didn't just go up north, not just trade partners in the north, but also down to the south, thereby conquering that seaport. Just to appreciate, we obviously know how important Eilat is, but just to take us down memory lane for a moment, there's actually a very beautiful poem written by Naomi Shemer called Machar. For those who appreciate Israel Israeli culture. The starting stanza reads as follows, and try to pinpoint when it was that she penned this. Machar ulai nafliga basfinot. Tomorrow, maybe we will go out in the ships. Mechof elat ad chof shenhav. Va'al hamashchatot hayeshanot yatinu tapuchei zahav. And perhaps these ships will come back bearing the golden oranges. What is Naomi Shemer referring to? What is she talking about? This poem was written in the 1960s. So she's talking about the attrition along the Arabian Peninsula between Egypt and the area, the Horn, over there on the eastern side, where Egypt was threatening and finally, as an act of war, did close the Straits of Tiran, thereby locking off Israel's trade routes in the south. And just as a fascinating note, of course, the UN, in its incredible wisdom at the time, which seems to always continue to extend its wisdom, what was their solution to the act of war at the time? They wanted to get through one convoy of international ships. So they're trying to work out how to get international ships through the straits. The fact that Egypt was escalating war, that didn't make too much of a difference to them at the time. Nonetheless, that's what they were interested in. Which leads us now to the next question. So it talks about trade with this place called Ophira. Where is Ophir? So it's interesting that the Encyclopedia Britannica points out that it's really unknown as to where it is. It is referenced in Bereshit that Ophir is a place of gold, which is what they did trade there. But there are differences of opinion as to where Ophir today could be. One suggestion, which could be of where it is this interesting map over here, has it that it's actually at the over here at the very, very bottom. It's actually hard to read on this map over here. It is at the bottom of the peninsula over here that is between the Arabian Peninsula and Egypt. So over here, I think that would be Yemen today, which is where it would be. So we're talking about a large trading point on the convergence of the two seas, the two oceans over here, which is where they were getting it. But again, it's very hard to know exactly where Ophir is today. Nonetheless, this concludes this particular section. Now, one last note I'd like to make on this section. After getting a sense of you're having international alliance, you're having Tyre sending their own seamen, who is their trade, ultimately down with Shlomo Melech's men into the sea, going down south. So you have this incredible expansion. Pharaoh is now conquering lands for Israel. This is really Israel's clearly at the center, the nexus of all of this activity. But there are complications, and one of the complications we already start seeing here, and perhaps we didn't focus on it when we're reading the Psukim. The Ababinab makes a point, I think this is a very significant point. Coming back to that Miloy. Remember that Miloy that Shlomo Melech built, and it was the place that David Melech started, it was the area where people could congregate. Why was he building that? So you'd say, well, David Melech started, he didn't finish it, now he has the money, he has the assets, so he can do it. So Ababinab says, complicated. It was a nice place next to Zion. They would make simchas there, right? It'd be a beautiful place to get married and to have all kinds of wonderful things. Because people would congregate there, it was called Miloy. David Melech built it inwards. Shlomo Melech completed this building. He says, after this Yizkor, it would mention Shebono Sabibne Bas Paroi Shoiso Besos Mukhailov. If you follow the Psukim, it says when did he build the Bas Miloy? When Bas Paroi left his palace. Why? So Veschomas Yushram Shuasa, Vehayoze Binyan Gadol, the Fishoya Khomas, and he explains the three walls. So the Babi now points out over here is that also he built it because of Bas Paroi. Meaning, yes, the national interest, but there's also the personal interest. That's a very dangerous thing to be noting, the Barbanel points out. Yes, on the public face, where the taxes are being collected, and he's putting together the Miloy and the Yerushalayim and the Chomos and all the wonderful things, and it's all national interest. But the Barbanel is pointing out the Pesukim are indicating to us that there was also personal interest. Personal interest is dangerous. Therefore, he says, "Hine bono es Gezer." Why did he build the city Gezer? Says the Ababinel. Do you notice that? He says, "Why? Because lefisha para olav yilkadov and asan leshiluchim." Because his father-in-law Pharaoh gave it to him because he conquered it. Rotzel amar matanol levitoy. It was a gift. Shlomo Melech was forced to build it because of this. What's he going to do? He's going to leave fallow his father-in-law's gift? No, he wanted him to build that. Which means to say that hidden in the national interests of Shlomo are also complications. There's personal complications. His relationship, it was a political alliance. It's supposed to work, but it also comes at a certain cost. That cost is going to cost us soon, because as we get to the later Prokim in Yud Aleph, one of the reasons why the great opportunist, Yeravam ben Nevat, the person who's going to now break the kingdom in the future, he says, V'zeh dovar ha-sheherim yad b'melech shlomo b'shlomo b'noyes ha-miloy sogar v'es peretz ir daviv. Why? Because it was David Melech who built the miloy. What was his claim? Of course David Melech built the miloy. It's great for the people, isn't it? People can hang out and make large weddings. No. Because there's more complications. Yeravam realized there was personal interest over here, and that already is the hairline fracture over here of complication in the future. This closes Perek Tes. God willing, as we get to next week, we'll start Perek Yud and start exploring some of the other relationships, the other alliances that Shlomo HaMelech has. Thank you very much, everybody, for taking the time. Have a wonderful night.